We started the service with Let Me Find a Quiet Place, and that's the name of the title of the sermon this morning, because more and more I want to find a quiet place. The world is a very noisy place. I don't know if you've noticed that, but on the way driving here from DeBenneville, there were trucks roaring by, there were horns blasting, there were people making comments on my driving, other than my wife. And fortunately, I can't lip read, but I knew that they were making a lot of noise inside their cars also, and that noise penetrated even into my head as we were driving. All through the world, it is just noise. You go to a gas station and the pumps talk to you. And now there's a television screen in half the shops you go into, and five screens if you go into bars, and I know that nobody here does, except for sports. And you've got five television screens and music yelling at you. We were at a restaurant the other night, and the noise was deafening, and when people started to leave, they turned up the music in the restaurant, because apparently nature and humans fear the absence of noise. They are pumping more and more noise into our lives. I feel like I'm in a Batman cartoon. Boom, pow, slap. Just in everyday life, shopping, driving, being. On television, okay, you've got the noisy cop shows and the screaming talk shows where people yell and scream, and conversation is not modeled. Civility is not modeled. Anger, passion, screaming is modeled. Even when you go to news, you now have it's more entertaining, apparently, if people are red in the face and yelling at each other instead of talking to each other. And on regular news, if you happen to tune into a car chase, and if you live in Los Angeles and turn on the news, that is inevitable because apparently that's very interesting to some people. There's music under it. There's a musical track on half of the news programs on the broadcast stations. And the chyrons, you know, the little words that they put underneath that identify the station and tell you to stay tuned, they don't just appear. They swoop in with a swoop sound and a clang and a bang, and there's just no getting away from it other than getting away from it. But that's not so easy either, because then there are the noises inside my head. One of my favorite scenes in a great old movie, The Gods Must Be Crazy, was in very busy Johannesburg when you heard all of the noise of Johannesburg and the cars zipping in and out, and this woman walks into a cafeteria and sits down and says to the person next to her, "Oh, I hope the noises in my head aren't disturbing your lunch." Sometimes I feel like the noises in my head are disturbing her lunch. It's a noisy world in there. I'm not a good meditator because my head is just channeling several stations at the same time. And I've tried meditation, and aside from the position and a couple of back surgeries, I don't have a great future in yoga. I did the isolation tanks. That was pretty good. You crawl into the water, your body disappears, and you kind of watch the movie inside your head. And I really like that. But most of the time, in order not to get all of the noise, I end up putting sound into my head. That's a little paradoxical, I understand, but I try to drown out the world more and more with classical music. With the other night, I was listening to the Bach B minor. Last night up at the Benneville, in between those damn birds chirping so I could get them out of my head too, I was listening to the Mozart Requiem. Now, it's a tension that we all live with. There's a lot of noise out there in the world, and some of it is we have to pay attention to. It's the cries, it's the pain. It is the real stuff of people living and dying, of suffering and of rejoicing, of singing and of dancing and of tripping and of falling. And I need to be attached to that. But I can't be attached to it all of the time, 24 hours a day. Because in order to have anything to give to family, to friends, even to strangers who have a legitimate call on my energy and on yours, we have to take in nourishment. And some of that nourishment is quiet. Some of that nourishment is turning off the sounds, the demands, the distractions, the cacophony of a modern world. The good news and the bad news, as is almost always the case, they're related, in our world is that we are in some ways more connected to each other around this planet than ever before in the history of humanity. There is no plausible excuse that a human being has to say, "Oh, I didn't know. Oh, something bad was happening in Rwanda? There was genocide in Somalia? Oh, I didn't know. Something strange is going on in Pakistan? I'm sorry, I just wasn't paying attention." We are very connected electronically with information that comes in. And it's important information. But it can also be overwhelming information. Sometimes the noise is so great that we can't hear. In the same way that some of us, I think Chris was referencing this morning, the 60s and the Beatles and a little bit of music and rock and roll. Well, a lot of people from my generation are going through our middle years, middle late sometimes years, going, "What? Huh?" Because the noise was so great it causes a physiological hearing deficit. But there's also a psychological hearing deficit. There is the being drowned with the constant noise of the world. And that's, I'm not using noise in any kind of pejorative sense. I'm saying that without filters, we stop hearing. Without having the energy, the emotional energy, to be able to refresh ourselves and renew ourselves with some sense of peace, of quiet, some ability to center ourselves and not to be pulled into every moment and every crisis and every call. If you live in the world, you know that you cannot solve every problem. You cannot remediate all hunger. You can do what you can do. And you and I can do more when we are coming from a healthy place, from a rested place, from a place that has made a choice, not in terms of what has been the loudest demand, but the choice that is made by what has come through us as we are with our own values, with our own sense of energy, and what uses our own resources and skill sets the best. I understood very early in my Peace Corps career when I was living in North Africa that there was no way that I could solve the problems of the country in which I was living. The legitimate demands of the hungry were more than I could personally meet, whatever my resources and whatever my goodwill. People in the helping professions, doctors, know that if they meet every need 24 hours a day, they won't be living doctors by the second or third week. In clergy, I can't tell you the statistics for other denominations, but I can tell you that nobody in my divinity school class is still serving a church, that the dropout rate was over 60% in the first 5 years because there were people that could not create borders, could not manage their own resources, could not go shopping for what their souls needed. And I submit to you that all of us are in the helping professions. All of us have an unlimited demand on our emotional resources, that the cries of the oppressed, of the imprisoned, of the hungry, of the homeless are real and legitimate, and we have to be able to hear them and have to be able to respond to them, but we also have to find a way to fill ourselves, to give ourselves resources to give to others. So Barbara's remark was so wonderful and on point, that to be able to love something, to open up one's heart to love, it's not a question of I've got to feed the damn dog. It's I got to feed the dog. There's a big difference. It's the same activity, but there's a big difference in how we approach it when we're coming from a loving, a centered, a thoughtful position that comes from the heart, as opposed to just coming out of a sense of guilt or a frantic sense of I've got to respond to all of that noise and do something about it. It's funny how we can make music out of noise. I don't know what your first experiences were with classical music. It seemed very incoherent to me. I remember being Gershwin being very natural and Bach seeming very unnatural, and now Bach is kind of my music of choice, of comfort. My brain has made a pattern and turned what was first noise into nourishment. We were up at the Benneville this weekend, and last night it was pretty clear and the stars were bright and beautiful, and you look at those stars for inspiration. And the quiet beauty of the stars twinkling in the night, and you really block out the fact that those are a couple of 100 billion thermonuclear explosions that are going off in the sky. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is, those are stars that are twinkling out there. They're a source of beauty, of inspiration. They're something that gives us a sense of scale, of perspective, of who we are, how big we are, how brief we are in this universe, and how brief this time is that we get to stand in wonder under what is for us the silent stars. Some philosophers said that everyone has two philosophers, their own and Spinoza's. And I want to just talk a little bit now towards the end about Spinoza. Because when I look at the world, when I look at the universe, and I feel both a sense of intimate connection and some sense of at times needing to break the connection, to fade away, to step back, to take in, I think about Spinoza and how he talked about the idea of a God, of a divinity, not out there somewhere else as a puppet master, not out there somewhere else sending good weather to the church picnic, or in the case of my morning prayers today, an absence of traffic and ice coming down the mountain from DeBenneville. Not that one, but the idea that this flesh, this breath, this life, this existence is sacred. And what greater meaning can divinity, can the sacred have than what, it's not a question of faith, but a question of stopping and noticing the everyday miracle. I get asked all of the time because of the business I'm in, well, do you believe in miracles? Well, if a miracle is the technical definition, which is an intervention in the laws of nature from outside, no. But if it's the regular language of what we mean by miracle, which is basically, wow, which is, it's amazing. It is, even if explicable, it's inexplicable. That we're alive. We're alive with choices under the stars. We're alive and we exist and we are part of a vastness that is in some ways beyond human imagination, but every one of us has minds that reach out to the edge of creation, because everything that we know is a part of what's in here. This is why in the Jewish Talmud and in the Muslim Quran, it says if you save one life, you save a world. Each one of us contains the world, contains knowledge from the farthest star to the beating, throbbing vein on our neck. And so when I get asked, do I believe in miracles? It's not a question of belief. It's a question of experience. When we stop just for a moment and in the quiet, listen to the miracle of breath, of taking in spirit. That's the root of inspiration. Somebody expires. We expire all the time. You look at the ordinary, everyday, wonderful miracle of life, of love, of companionship, of what it means to be together in a community like this. We follow the bell into a quiet place. Is there a magic in our sharing? Is there a force outside the universe that says, oh, thank you for reminding me that Gordon is healing, and keep helping Gordon? We can believe or not believe in that. But what we must not simply believe, but know, is that by sharing our time together, by breathing together, by singing together, by being silent together, we have an experience that takes our individual lives and multiplies it by the fact that we share time together. And we give each other inspiration. We give each other energy. We give each other encouragement. And in the noise and in the silence is the living. In the laughing and in the crying is the living. When we pay attention to ourselves, not to the exclusion of others, but so that we can have something of substance to give, it is a win-win situation. We can find quiet places inside our own lives, inside our own hearts, and someday I hope inside my own head, to get refreshment, to get a sense of order, to be reminded of the beauty of living, of the important relationship that we have with and to and for each other. I want to find a quiet place not to flee to, but to visit, to be re-energized, to reconnect. I want to have a quiet place. I want to be in a noisy place. I don't want the noise and the pain and the joy of the world locked out of my life. And I want to have the energy to engage it and be a part of it as best I can, for as long as I can, with as many as I can. And part of that starts with knowing what it is that each of us needs and how each of us has different ways of finding moments of peace in the madness, moments of sanity when all around us it seems to be crazy, moments of hope when the world seems to be in despair, and moments when we understand the enormous power that we have in this world, even when there are moments when we feel powerless. Our choices, as in most things, are not between engagement till you drop or retreat and never touch and never be open. Our choices are how to manage within a human community, within a world community, within this sector of the universe that is alive with choices, with hope, with reality, and with possibilities that we can make a difference in creating.